Hi, everybody, and welcome to our Saturday morning podcast, where we take 20 minutes, we find a topic we find fascinating, and, you know, I've talked about this a lot on my show. We just got out of the decade of dynasties, the UConn women's basketball, Alabama dynasty, Patriots dynasty, Warriors and Heat dynasty. And there's a lot of reasons for this, which I've gone on and talked about at length on my show. College football has now a regional and financial dynasty called the Big Ten and the SEC. And it is not only puncturing the momentum and sort of the gravitas of the Pac-12, but it is making it entirely difficult to keep the coaches out west. And we saw it again this week where little old Michigan State, not Michigan, not Ohio State, not Penn State, not Wisconsin, Michigan State steals away Mel Tucker from Colorado and Bruce Feldman, a great college football reporter, TV, print, everywhere for Fox Sports, is joining us. Am I too hyperbolic? Is this just a coach who decided to double his salary, or do you see something beyond that?
No, it's actually exactly what it is. I mean, look at just on the reality of this. So Michigan State, and first of all, Mel Tucker had started his coaching career at Michigan State on Nick Saban's staff in the late 90s. So there was a lot of people there, whether it's Tom Izzo, Nick Saban had some influence, some other people who were inside the university who had felt like, this is our guy. This is the guy we feel like should, we know what he's about. This is a guy we feel like should take the program going forward. So they reach out to him late last week, and he just basically says, you know, I want to be at Colorado. I plan on being here. Then they come back to him like 3 days later with a big financial offer. And he thinks about it, and he's inclined, I'm going to still stay at Colorado. That was his plan. Then they came back to him even more the next day. And by the end of that night, breaking news, Mel Tucker's leaving the Pac-12 in Colorado to go to the Big Ten. And a big reason for this is Michigan State is going to double his salary pool, basically from a little over $3 million to $6 million. That is a very significant factor.
Yeah, that should be noted. That's not just for Mel. That's for his assistants.
Correct. I mean, they're doubling Mel's salary. They're more than doubling Mel's salary, and they are doubling his salary pool for his coaches. And so about a week and a half before this happened, I did a column on The Athletic about just what the money means, because the SEC had just put out its revenue numbers for the fiscal year, and they were eye-popping. And what you're talking about is very true about the gulf right now that exists between the Big Ten and the SEC, and then everybody else, and most notably the Pac-12 is getting left behind. And what that can translate to from talking to people in the sport is a lot of schools in the Pac-12 may have one recruiting person in the recruiting staff. Maybe a work study kid is also helping out. At Ohio State, they have 11 full-time people. They have five people in creative media alone, and that's a big deal. It's a big deal if you're Colorado that Mel Tucker and his staff are flying on planes just like their next door neighbor, whereas a lot of other big schools are traveling on private planes. That matters because when you're at Colorado, there's not a lot of players. You maybe can get three or four players in the state who are probably legit, you know, top 25 program caliber players. You got to get on the road and recruit. And so if you don't have the access to private planes and those things, and that costs money, and with all these TV money that's coming in, and it's going to get even bigger with these TV contracts the Big Ten and the SEC are about to get, that's only going to set the Pac-12 even further behind where they already are.
Something else to throw out at you, it's the Silicon Valley dilemma. So Silicon Valley has obviously made Seattle richer. Salt Lake, it's called Silicon Slopes, San Francisco, Seattle, Los Angeles, Boulder, Denver is becoming increasingly techy. What does that mean? It's driving up home prices. So to buy a home in East Lansing for $400,000, that's $1.6 million in Boulder. is that Silicon Valley has driven up the housing prices, which for assistance is a big deal when you're selling it to your wife and kids. Nobody is talking about this, but when I can pay a Southern coach or a Midwest coach $700,000, his buying power is significantly more than a $400,000 coach that has to live in Seattle or Los Angeles or the Bay Area at Cal and Stanford. So I don't know if you've thought about this, but I think you can find good head coaches. I think it's hard to build a great staff in the Pac-12 now.
Yeah, I think it comes back to that salary pool number. And I think what the key is, you know, for a lot of folks, you're hearing this, you're going, that's outrageous money. A special teams coordinator is making $250,000. That's way more than I make. That's way more than my buddy makes. That's way more than the guy I watch football with makes. But relative to the guys in the sport who are doing the similar jobs, it's not. You are on the other side of it. It's not insignificant that a couple of days before, I think it was 2 days before Mel Tucker accepts the job, his defensive line coach leaves Colorado. He came with Mel Tucker, leaves Colorado to go to Tennessee. He didn't go to Alabama. He didn't go to LSU. He went to Tennessee, which obviously has, you know, terrific football history, but Tennessee is not right now a top 10 program. And so when you're losing assistants because you're not paying them enough, or you can't pay them enough, that stuff matters. And so, you know, ultimately, I think when you look at how this is, and the thing is, it's happening now, it's going to get much worse. The Gulf is going to, when the TV dollars for the next contract kick in, that's when the gap is really going to be eye-popping. And if you're USC, you might be able to withstand it if things are going right and your leadership gets his act together and all that. But almost everybody else, I mean, I use this analogy in Colorado this week after my story broke, that the way that folks in the Pac-12 and the old Pac-10 used to would look at the Mountain West schools, that's the way the Big Ten and the SEC look at the Pac-12. That's the difference. I mean, it may jolt people because they're like, hey, we had all these Heisman winners and this and that. This is the reality now. They are looking at it much like the Pac-12 looks down, like Colorado would look down at Colorado State. Well, this is what everybody else is looking at you guys now because the financial differences are that significant.
Now, let me push back. I'll be devil's advocate. And I'll say, listen, Oregon and Washington right now have excellent rosters full of NFL players. If they were 2-3 in the conference and just USC got its act together, the conference would be fine. You'd have Oregon as the 8th best team in the country, Washington as 11th, and USC as a top 5. That the Pac-12, much like the Big Ten, is dependent on one team, USC or Ohio State. If the Buckeyes are down, it's not the same conference. Yet Alabama can be down and LSU can still win the national title. Florida, LSU, Georgia, recruiting, Auburn, they're recruiting powerhouses. But if USC, Bruce, could just get the right guy, and then Oregon and Washington battled it out for second and third place and went to good solid bowls and had a bunch of NFL players, all would be fine out west. Is that possible?
It's possible, but what's different is, you know who has made the biggest gain from USC spinning its wheels and struggling? Oregon. So Oregon is well positioned. They just got, you know, 2 5-star linebackers committed a couple of months ago and signed. And one of them, people, Justin Flo, think is the best linebacker prospect the West Coast has had in years. That kid, USC, he would be at instead of Oregon. A lot of these kids would probably be at USC instead of Oregon. Some of them wouldn't be at Washington. So I'm not saying there's not enough players to go around, but I think, you know, if USC was a top 5 program again, that would change the narrative to some degree because everything is driven from the top. If you have a great program, that covers up what happens in the middle or at the bottom. I mean, I think that's a fair statement. It's just then I think you'd have what it felt like, 12 years ago, where it was Pete Carroll and then it was everybody else and there was a big gap and it just covered things up. But what's different now, I think, is the gap between the middle programs in the bottom tier programs. And that's what right now, let's say what Colorado is. They haven't had any sustained success since they've been in the Pac-12. And the resources are much lower. Their commitment to football is not the same. And so you're going to lose, as you said at the top of this, Michigan State. Not Michigan. Michigan State was the one who made the big pull. And so when it's when their middle programs are able to big brother your middle programs, that's where I think your reality is. And I think that ultimately that hurts the conference significantly.
You know, I've always had, this is kind of my theoretical DNA, Bruce Feldman joining us. I kind of have a belief that the longer a country or the longer a business is around, the greater the gap between the haves and have-nots. And I'll give you an example, the newspaper industry. The longer it's around, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Athletic have separated from the cream of the crop, have separated. In Silicon Valley, the older it gets, Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon have separated from the rest of Silicon Valley. If you look at sports, let's take college football. I mean, there's never been a bigger gap between the 1% in America and the bottom. Technology is a dynamic that creates wealth 24/7. It used to be even the richest guy in America went to bed, the world stopped, he got up, started his day again. You can make money when you're sleeping now. So I look at college football, and the longer it exists, the greater the gap between the South and everybody else, because there is simply more passion. It matters more. A lot of USC's greatness was when Pete Carroll was here and there was no NFL teams here. Now you've got two NFL teams. Both the Clippers and the Lakers are interesting. There wasn't two soccer teams when Pete Carroll was here. Can I make the argument the South is doing what every business does? The longer it lasts, there's a separation, cream rises, and the South cares more. In the Southern footprint, there's simply more athletes. And this is just a natural byproduct of a long-standing business. The cream rises, and the Pac-12 will just never, they just don't care enough. There's too many things, too many pro teams, too many mountains, too many beaches, too many side interests.
Well, I think what you're saying has merit. I think what it really is there's way more margin for error when you're, you know, the expression I would use when I talk about, especially the SEC, is they're committed to playing football at the highest level. There's an aggression level in terms of how they want to position football and how they're going to that line that the SEC uses as its motto that people can mock. But in this case, there's a reality to it. It just means more.
Yep.
It just means more to the fans. It just means more to the coaches. A cynic could say it just means more to the boosters. I mean, all of this stuff factors in. It doesn't mean that if USC had Pete Carroll or some version of Pete Carroll kind of coach who is running the program right now, that they couldn't make a run at a national title. USC has it's a private school with a ton of money, with a huge recruiting base and huge history. They, if things are going good, USC is on is in a different position than everybody else in the Pac-12. But I think again, what happens now, and thinking about your model as it relates to technology and all this stuff, is I go back to that part about Ohio State talking to their recruiting coordinator who came with Urban Meyer from Florida and was a guy who was with him at UF. What they have changed is five people in creative media. People are like, well, what does that mean? 11 people just in the recruiting office. That's how you communicate now with 16, 17, and 18-year-olds. It's not just with a text from a coach. It's all this kind of imagery and messaging, and that stuff matters. And the private planes, that matters, because if you can't see a kid or your coach can't see him or that kid, that coach is late, you know, we're dealing with kind of a very fickle world right now. And so those details matter, and it translates. It doesn't mean that every entitled kid that you think is entitled is going to turn out to be a great player or going to turn out to be a bust, but it goes back to you just have a greater margin for error. You have, you know, Mel Tucker wanted a nutrition bar, which sounds like, okay, you know, in the football complex, wanted there was some detail stuff that when those things can't get just signed off on, this is a smaller example, or it sounds like it is. Before the SEC title game, Ed Ogeron, the SEC wanted him to come in a day early to do some media obligations. So he would be leaving Thursday from Baton Rouge instead of Friday to go to Atlanta. And his feeling was, hey, we do everything as a team. I want my team there with me. They're going to come on. And his AD, Scott Woodward, who, by the way, is, you know, was a Baton Rouge guy and had once worked in the Pac-12 at Washington as the AD, he was like, done. We're going to get this done. Some other places would say, oh, look how much money this is going to cost to fly the team, travel the team, put them in a hotel an extra night, all this other stuff. And it was like, hey, if this is what it takes to compete for a national title and win an SEC title, we're going to do it. And other places just would find reasons, you know, the bureaucracy. I mean, you could ask Rick Neuheisel, all the nonsense stuff that you deal with when you're the head coach at UCLA. That stuff, to that degree, doesn't happen at big-time programs in other parts of the country.
You know, it's interesting. I see this Bruce Feldman joining us sometimes with politics. I remember before a young man named Barack Obama from Chicago arrived on the scene, the Democrats were complaining, you know, our party's lost its way. And then all of a sudden, this dynamic politician arrived and won the election and a second term. And it was the conservatives saying, you know, the Republicans have lost their way. Then Trump, a dynamic personality, regardless of what people think about him, would be wins. And now the Democrats are like, well, we've lost our way. We've gone too far left. The reality is what Barack Obama solved and Trump solved for their specific parties was they were dynamic personalities. Could I argue this? The Pac-12 has a coach who's likable in Clay Helton. But if you put an Urban there, you put a James Franklin there, a dynamic personality, it solves USC. And I got into this discussion with somebody inside the program not long ago. And I said, LA is a very distracted town. Clay is perfect at New Mexico State. He's perfect somewhere that's not distracted. But USC probably now in 2020, LeBron's in town, Kawhi's in town, two soccer teams, two NFL teams. But USC really needs to go out if Clay has the season many predict. They open with Bama. They don't have a left tackle currently at USC right now. That USC needs to really go out and get a superstar head coach, perhaps from the NFL. Do you believe that is the answer to solve USC? To really, in this distracted, crowded market, get a superstar, get a Harbaugh?
I don't think it necessarily has to be a superstar or a big personality type to compete with the star factor. I really think it's this. And I think what you said, Clay Helton is a really decent, good man.
Oh, yeah.
I think one of the challenges with maybe the dynamic of the of some of the players that you have out here is Monday through Friday, it can't feel like, and I don't want to say it's like a substitute teacher, but if the vibe is, you know, everybody's comfortable, you need an edge to it. I've seen that at other places where, you know, you can have players be comfortable and loose, but there has to be an edge of a urgency there. And I feel like just from having been out here for a while, that's the one thing that's been missing here. And if you have somebody there that maybe people don't feel like they can take advantage of, or people don't feel like, you know what, this goes into development, and there's something that's hard to pull off. I mean, there's been a lot of staff turnover at USC. I think also what's hurt Clay Helton, and to me this is no fault of Clay Helton's, but when you've been on the hot seat at such a high-profile place for so long, it becomes almost impossible to recruit at a really high level to compete with some of these other programs. I mean, it's not – I mean, they have a five-star caliber quarterback in Keaton Slovis, but Keaton Slovis came in as you know, a three-star guy. There wasn't a ton of traffic on him. It worked out really well for USC because they had a smart evaluation. But if it's the five-star kid who has all this traffic around him, well, it's easy enough for those other schools to go, you can't go to USC, Clay. You don't know who's going to be your head coach. They're going to fire Clay Helton a year from now or 6 months from now. And that has really undercut him so much. And I think a part of that is because Clay Helton was a guy that most of the fan base just didn't feel like should have gotten the job in the first place. And then he got off to a rocky start, you know, losing a bowl game or losing to Stanford in the Pac-12 title game. And it's just been more of that where, for whatever reason, it's just kind of undercut him at every chance on the recruiting part. So I think there's the recruiting piece of it, and I think there's the Monday through Friday piece of it. And, you know, look, hopefully for USC's sake, these Todd Orlando kind of hires and assistant moves that he's shaken up his staff and maybe brought in guys with a little more of an edge to them, maybe that'll be something that gets them cranked up and can take them up to the next level. Because it's not like they don't have any players. They do, but it's just been kind of right now. I feel like USC has had a hard time getting out of USC's way. And a big reason for that is they had a terrible AD before and they had bad leadership and all that stuff. It's not to say you can't overcome it, but it's just been such an uphill battle for USC, and it's been much harder than it needs to be.
And I also think, I know people listening from the South or the Midwest will push back on this. College football is better when there's a West Coast presence. USC is good for the sport. It's getting very regionalized. We saw what happened to the NBA when LeBron left the Eastern Conference. It feels like in the NBA it's killed ratings. The sport is too lopsided. Too many of the good players and teams are out West. I think it can hurt baseball, where the Yankees and Dodgers now are just dealing with different payrolls. Even the Red Sox feel a little bit now that they can't keep up financially with the Dodgers or the Yankees. I think when you have I don't need ultimate parity, but I do think there's a sense in college football that the sport dies at the Rocky Mountains. And I think USC is the one program that can elevate the entire sport. The highest-rated college football national title game in recent memory was USC-Texas. And you can see these championship games. I love college football, and I watch 8 Alabama games a year and 6 Clemson games. But I think they're going to meet again next year in the title. And I do think the Pac-12 needs an imprint, or the sport's going to be marginalized and regionalized to a larger degree than it already is.
Well, I think what happens too is, you look, USC, I'll use Notre Dame as an example. It's better for college football and Notre Dame is a top 5 kind of program, top 10 kind of program, because then they're relevant. And I'm not saying it's because all the Notre Dame fans are going to watch those games anyway. But the thing is, when they're really good, you're going to get a lot of fans who hate Notre Dame who want to tune in to watch Notre Dame. And they are hoping to see Notre Dame lose. I think there's a big chunk of people who tune in if USC is really good, to root against them, because to a lot of people, USC represents things they don't like. Just like I am sure that LSU had a big amount of support that weren't really people from Louisiana who were rooting for LSU to go into Tuscaloosa and whip the tide. I think that works that way. I think right now, I don't know how, it's hard to find a lot of people who I think really dislike Clemson. You know, they had Deshaun Watson, who was a great kid and everybody liked him, and Dabo Swinney, who's kind of got this aw shucks, it's not going to be 4th-and-1 every second of the day kind of vibe around him. So I don't, I think when you have some of these figures and some of these programs that come with a lot of other stuff with them, I think people can get into those, and just especially in this day and age, just as much as rooting for a team, you'll get people who root against them, and they're going to tune in to say, God, I hope they lose. And that, that adds up to ratings too.
Okay, Bruce, I have 2 programs I want to discuss and 2 coaches. What's the current standing of Tom Herman, who I've been told is difficult, smart, but it does feel like he's alienated some within the program? Address him. And what's the current standing of Jim Harbaugh, his administration, his boosters currently at Michigan? Give me Tom Herman and Jim Harbaugh.
Well, with Tom Herman, obviously had a good year when they beat Georgia, but then it's been a backstep. He fires half his staff. And then on top of this, what you've had is some really immature behavior that I think really does not sit well with a lot of people going, you're the Texas head coach. You shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be mocking Drew Locke, the other team's quarterback, in a bowl game. You shouldn't be flipping off the Longhorn Network camera on signing day. That stuff looks beneath what you should get from a college head coach at a program like that. And I think those things do not help. You know, if he goes 8-4 again, I think there'll be a lot of people who go, you know what, we're done with this guy. He's had time. They should be better than they are. He already fired most of his staff to get to this point. I think his seat is warm. I don't think it's scalding hot, but Texas has a lot of money, and they're looking over and their big rival, and they say, hey, here's Lincoln Riley. He's going to the playoff. Why isn't that up? As far as Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, he's got the program better than what it was when he inherited it. The problem is it's the Ohio State thing. He's been embarrassed by Ohio State at every turn, and I don't know if you're Michigan. To me, it's a harder thing there because I don't know who you get at Michigan if Jim Harbaugh were to leave. And I don't know where he would go because all I've heard for a long time is Jim Harbaugh is this ultimate competitor. Well, how do you, if you're the ultimate competitor, walk away after you have not got the one thing that matters more at Michigan than anything else when it comes to football, and that's beating Ohio State. And he's not done it, and he hasn't come close to doing it in the last couple of years now. So I don't know what, you know, I think you got to ride it out and just say, hey, you know what? Hopefully he will recruit better. Hopefully his team will be more dialed in. But if they're getting Ohio State's best punch that game every time, they're getting their A game, and they have not matched up to it. And until that happens, I think there's going to be a feeling that he is really underachieved and underdelivered in Ann Arbor, and that's not going to sit well with anybody there.
All right, Bruce Feldman, Fox Sports college football reporter. Bruce, it's great talking to you.
Always a pleasure, Colin. Thanks for having me.